This is Rick Warren, and he has switched from taking a passive resistance role and has switched to open opposition to the Southern Baptist Conference's continued stagnant position against women as leaders. So let's talk about how the SBC is breaking the church and what Rick Warren is doing to fix it. Never thought those words would come out of my mouth, but here we are.
Yeah, and I've got to like wonder, like could we ever have like uttered the phrase Rick Warren culture warrior?
Right. Oh my god. Wow. And so for those of you who don't know, Rick Warren, best-selling author, purpose-driven life and all of the derivatives thereof, senior pastor, founder of Saddleback Church, more weekly attenders than some countries have citizens. You know, so Rick Warren, very, very successful, very popular pastor, has had it up to here with the Southern Baptist Convention's continued insistence that women have no place as leaders. And it seems like he has he stepped down as leader of Saddleback. I mean, he's retired just because he retired, but it seems like he has stepped down in order to pick this fight. Instead of like being interviewed by Relevant Magazine or Christianity Today or any one of dozens of Christian media outlets, Rick Warren has just gone straight to the Washington Post and has written his own op-ed. So I think that is a pretty clear declaration to me that he is done having this conversation, quote unquote, in the family. And he's ready to kind of talk on a bigger stage about this.
Yeah, like I am curious. It's like, what is the ratio of balls to brains here?
On Rick's side, I've got to imagine like there's just this quote of like, what do I have to lose? Like at this point, like I've sold all the books I need to sell. And dirty little secret, I'm going to keep selling books well after I'm dead. This is one of those books, you know? So yeah. Like, not only am I fine, but my wife is fine and my children will be fine long after I'm gone. But I don't want to read this whole article out loud for you, but I did have three choice snippets that are, you know, I'm assuming, like, he's a big boy, so I'm assuming these came from his own brain and not from some other person feeding him lines. I thought he made three points that go well with you and I, with our continued message that one of the continued shames of the church is treating women as second-class citizens. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things he says is he gives us a little reminder of history that that the SBC has been in decline since the Baptist faith and message confession was revised in 2000 to add a prohibition against female pastors. Then in 2015, an amendment to the Constitution weaponized that confession, turning it into an enforceable creed. And all I wanted to mention was that is one of the points that I keep making over and over again that people hate is that we are always, as humans, renegotiating with the Bible, renegotiating with doctrine, renegotiating with what we mean as times change, as societies change, as perspectives change, as norms and morals change. We're always in negotiation with that. And Rick Warren just reminds us that churches are no different. Churches renegotiate this stuff all the time, and it wasn't all that long ago that the SBC negotiated this kind of presuppositions and made them into canon, you know?
Like we're talking about ultimately wisdom. Like these are like the laws are meant to impart wisdom and produce wisdom. Like, you know, any ancient society then it's like they had these like large legal texts, which were not meant to actually be the law. They were meant to teach how to, you know, make judgments.
Right.
And in the same way, like the Bible today, you know, like we have to, as we learn things about how the world works, we, our economic systems change, our governmental systems change, our social systems change. Like we have to keep trying to understand, okay, well, how does this wisdom apply to this now? And I feel like Rick Warren is landing on the right side of this argument.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the SBC doesn't.
Right. Well, it's just interesting that, you can get up in a pulpit week after week after week and talk about the glory of God's creation while at the same time kind of always pushing down half of that creation on a theological basis, on a hermeneutical basis, on a philosophical basis, on a moral basis, on an ethical basis. It just seems to be more consistent if you don't keep trying to crush people just for wanting to be part, you know, just for wanting to be in the same room, you know? So I do think in that sense, you know, it's not a revelation to call Rick Warren right. Like, it's kind of like, wow, like, look how amazing my 7-year-old for getting right that 1 + 1 = 2, you know? like the equation is kind of like, that's where we are, sadly, you know? All right, let's move on. Okay. So you and I always, we often talk about folly of sweeping things under the rug, right? Those things always mm-hmm. find a way back mm-hmm. out, right? And so one of the truisms that Rick mentions in his article, in his op-ed, is that some SBC leaders seem unable to admit or talk about it, but denial is dishonesty, right? And so he writes, I should note that men treat this as a theological issue, whereas women see it as an existential issue because it denies the gifts, talents, and skills that they were sovereignly given by God, right? And so, like, that's not an unfair observation, right? Men are from Mars, women are from Venus or whatever. We just see things differently. It's part of what makes society work, right? That different people have different strengths, see things differently. It's just interesting that in the seeing of things differently, that the men either cannot see or refuse to see one, the injustice of their position, but B, the lack of scriptural support for their position.
So I feel like for men, like in the SBC at least, you know, or, you know, similar denominations, I feel like it might actually be an existential to them, an existential threat to them as well. Because as, you know, women take roles that men used to get to say, well, this is just a man's role, they don't know how to define themselves as men anymore. And I think that might be freaking them out.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't excuse it, but, you know, at least, like, maybe it gives us something we can work with.
Absolutely. So how does the Southern Baptist Conference, how does this persistence in wanting to uphold a policy that is dubious at the best in its biblical foundations, how does this break the church? And I just kind of had this random thought that I typed out, and then let's kind of jump into it. When you don't fight for something, that's a tacit endorsement. What isn't said matters just as much as what is said. Do you ever notice how when you pastors are at the pulpit, they never ever preach the message of, here's 5 biblical examples of why women shouldn't be leaders. You can't do that because it's not there, right? So instead, what you hear at every pulpit is, here's 5 examples of how God has given men authority, right? And that's, so you have to come at it from that perspective because it's the only perspective that gives you any wiggle room to keep your, you know, immoral, unethical, unprofessional, unbiblical points alive, right? And so now that the SBC, like, they figured it out, we can't go to the Bible to defend these anti-women policies, right? So then we have to retreat to, this is tradition. This is the way it's always been. This, like, we are not the woke. We are not the progressive. You know, we are not a bunch of tree-hugging, you know, rainbow flag waving liberals. That is not us. We are the other thing. And so then by virtue of defining themselves by a tradition of political conservatism, social conservatism, sexual conservatism, professional conservatism, they've painted themselves into this corner where they're no longer preserving quote, I hate this phrase because we renegotiate biblical truth, right? Now we are like quite solidly in the practice of preserving tradition. And I just have to wonder, what is the point of preserving tradition if there is no spiritual value of it to it? There's no biblical truth to it. There is no kingdom benefit to it. All there is, hey, your organization needs, let, you know, they get to keep women down for a couple more decades.
Oh, gosh. You know, and this is just one of those things I want to like yell at people in Latin. Because, you know, there's this Latin phrase, argumentum ad antiquitatem, which is a reasoning fallacy, which means specifically argument against tradition.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just say, because this is the way it's been, this is the way it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, to an extent, I really appreciate tradition in the church in terms of things like, you know, ritual and worship. And also, you know, to an extent, you know, to, you know, theology, because, you know, we don't want to be, you know, as James puts it, like swept back and forth by every wind of doctrine. You know, we want to have stability. And so, you know, tradition does give us an inertia so we don't go like just ricocheting off, you know, a weird thing. But at the same time, you know, somebody like, you know, like a super Panamax ship, it's huge and it turns slowly, but it has to be piloted. Or else it just, you know, turns sideways in the Suez Canal and, right. And there you go, you know? So it's like, you know, it's like they're taking their hands off the wheel and saying, oh, we just have to let it go where it wants to. And I mean, that's cowardice.
Yeah. You know, and we're going to date ourselves on this particular episode. Cause this is also, this is the week where that, for those of, for people paying attention to the news, there's a submersible that has recently imploded. And this submersible exists to give people guided tours of the wreckage of the Titanic, right? And why is the Titanic where it is now? Because the people who were supposed to be diligent in guiding the Titanic through dangerous waters were asleep at the wheel, right? And so that, it feels very parallel to what's going on in the SBC. It feels like there are people who think that they are, they've got both hands on the wheel and they are protecting the legacy of the church and God's legacy somehow. But the truth is they're looking this way. And there's a ginormous iceberg coming from over here that they have no idea. And the iceberg's already kind of hit, right? With all the churches that have already been kicked out of the SBC and the thousands of churches, according to Rick Warren, the thousands of churches that now run the risk of being kicked out, right? Then you add on to that all the people that are going to leave as a result of knowing when the ship is sinking and wanting not to be a part of it, right? So it's just an interesting parallel to watching history repeat itself.
Yeah. And, you know, do you mind if I'm moving on to fixing it?
Yeah, please.
All right. So looking at like, you know, like how do we fix this? Right. Like, you know, you brought up the Titanic. So another dated reference would be the movie Titanic.
Yeah.
So, you know, in there, a guy whose name, you know, I can only call him Chief O'Brien because I watched too much Star Trek Next Generation.
Cole Meany. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think it was him that made the comment, like, you know, like even God couldn't sink her. And I really feel like that's just kind of the equivalent. What we have here is like, we have people with this thinking that like, well, we're the church.
Yeah.
You know, so like we can't be sunk.
Right.
But you can't just automatically presume you're on God's side. I mean, part of our faith is, you know, believing that, you know, we're mostly on God's side.
Right.
You know, but there's a hubris to it. Like they're leaning into it. At least that's what it seems like with the amendments to the Constitution, et cetera. Right. Like, it seems like they're leaning into it because they're convinced that there is no way that this will be their undoing.
Yeah.
And I mean, if the, you know, I don't know if you've looked at the chart recently for the membership of the SBC, but like it's decreasing faster than it was increasing to its peak.
Right.
And if Rick Warren's got his you know, finger on the pulse, yeah, I mean, it really doesn't seem like it's a good thing. It seems like it's sinking.
But in terms of fixing the church, I think we need to look back. Once again, we need to read our Bibles. And I think we need to look back to the story of David and Goliath. We tend to look at these denominations, Catholics, the SBC, the Methodist Church, all, you know, whatever big denomination that you know of, the AG denomination. We kind of think of them as these humongous structures. I don't think it's unreasonable to think that people who have a right view of who they are in Christ and who Scripture says they are, cannot, with David's kind of humility, with his with the practice that he had with his stone mm-hmm. and his slingshot, with his understanding that it doesn't matter how big you are, that every human has soft spots somewhere that can be taken advantage of, and with the ability to look around to your fellow soldiers and see the cowardice and say, somebody's got to stand up to this. And even if it comes at my own peril, I will speak the truth and I won't back down. I think that's the fix. I think that every man who leads the Southern Baptist Conference puts their pants on, words is hard. They put their pants on one leg at a time, just like everybody else. And with enough reasonable people contending for what is right, I can't help but think that this is yet something else that we can renegotiate.
You know, we have very much lost that prophetic voice, just kind of, in the church culture in general, where there's not a lot of people that are willing to stand up and rock the boat when it needs to be rocked. But let's face it, sometimes, you do need to be, the a-hole and stand up and say, hey, no, this is wrong. And Warren is, he's taking, I would call it kind of a soft prophetic role. Sure. I don't know if you think that's fair. Like he's not like going whole hog at this, but he's at least stood up. With being a prophetic voice, there is the wisdom, like you said, you can't just start, condemning everybody right. and throwing names out there. Right. Like the message of that prophetic voice needs to be appropriate for the moment. It needs to be appropriate for what's going on. You don't get people to really listen to you if you start off just hauling in on them. You do have to be dedicated to it. And I think praying for wisdom as anybody who wants to stand against us, I think that's a very important part of that process
too. A great point. And probably the point we should end on, right? Taking a stand is important. But the prayer is not just only to be victorious, right? The prayer is for wisdom, right? The prayer is for wisdom. And that's a super, super subtle and an important part of that. So I like that. Let's end there. All right. So this is Church is Lame.
All right.
You may have watched this video or listened to this podcast and think, man, Scott and Mark really hate the church. Nothing could be further from the church. We both love the church. We are actively involved in our churches. The goal of this podcast is to answer the question, why don't people take church more seriously? Well, it's because of the stupid things that we point out week to week. And hopefully, if we can stop doing these stupid things, the church could gain some credibility in the modern world and begin to bring kingdom and kingdom principles back to this world again. And so that's why we do what we do. And so if you want to be part of the conversation, by all means, head over to YouTube, find this video, and leave us a comment and do the thumbs up or thumbs down and let us know what you think. Or if you're listening to this podcast, go to your favorite podcast player and leave us a rating and review so we can know what you like about the podcast, what you don't. And if you want to yell at us like the most direct way possible, shoot us an email, churcheslamepodcast@gmail.com.